talk about Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
The Incredible Hulk.
Daredevil.
The Fantastic Four. The Human Torch.
Spider-Man.
Did I tell you about the time I created the amazing Spider-Man? Hold on, Jack. Let me take one more shot.
Do you have more chocolate?
It's about a kid. He's a photojournalist. He's shot in the space, bombarded by gamma rays, and turns green. Loses eyesight when he can see with sonar. Returns to Earth, has sex with a woman, gives her a BB, and she's the Human Torch. I call it Spider-Man.
Everyone say this or just mine? Please be aware that many members of your audience may be under 18 years.
Yeah, wouldn't it be funny if ours is better than yours?
Yeah, and at the bottom it says, God damn it, Scott.
Do better, Scott. Do better. Spider-Man.
Sorry, we're on a Spider-Man game. Brad, do you have a question?
Brad, one question, Brad.
One question for Brad.
Question, please.
Brad. Bradley.
Could I be part of that?
No. Not anymore. Oh yeah, guys, if you don't mind, apparently it's going to be a full room, so if everybody could scoot into the middle.
Let's just all get real groovy with one another, you know, man? Just get real close. That's right, yeah.
Come on,
you're all true believers.
I think we're going to make something wonderful is going to happen here.
That's right.
It's going to be a magic, and it's about Spider-Man magical moment. And he's dating a girl called Mary Jane for no reason that's related to my life.
That's pretty good.
And she's like, you get the jackpot. Spider-Man.
No art.
Spider-Man.
There you go.
Oh, is Brad trying it?
What?
You just dropped the R, right?
Spider-Man.
Hello, true believers.
True believers.
Now I turn into Paul Harvey.
Hello, true believers now.
Page two.
Who are we doing here? There's
someone else over the age of 30 out there. That's not thank you.
Even if they hate the show and they want to leave mid, always leave this way. Does everybody get that?
So at the end of this, we got to leave this way.
Spider-Man.
Welcome to an hour of us going Spider-Man. So for the people running the room, are we full? Can we start? Are we good?
Thumbs up.
Welcome to an hour long panel about Spider-Man. All right, here we go. We're ready to go. So just a quick show of hands so we know who we're talking to. If you've read Hot Link Webcomics or listened to Webcomics Weekly, which we are taking part in, just a quick show of hands so we know. Okay, good. So the majority of people in the room, though, are not, super familiar. So we're going to give you a quick rundown of who we are and the sort of path we've taken. Brad, you want to start off with the intro?
My name is Brad Geiger. I've been doing Evil Incorporated on the web. I've been doing a daily comic on the web for 10 years in February.
Wow.
Spider-Man. And I like a lot of these guys, I started out wanting to be a syndicated comic strip artist and found out that I had a lot better path to the success that I wanted by posting my stuff on the web and maintaining my own business. It's meant learning how to self-publish, learning how to promote myself at comic conventions and personal appearances, but it's been the most rewarding thing I've ever been involved in.
Chris?
Thank you. I do everything Brad does, but a little worse. I'm Chris Trout. I do Starslip at starslip.com.
The three-year-old spilled water over here.
Excuse me? Sonny? Hey, if anyone's in the back is with
towels,
I like a dumbass spilled the whole thing of water. I got a paper towel or a wet nap or a couple crackers, saltines.
I like how in the middle of Brad's intro we're doing like a Three Stooges down here.
All right, so Chris, give your intro.
Okay, Chris Stroud, starts with that gum. James Huff, he's got gum.
Bam.
How long have I been doing this? Since November 2000. And I couldn't be happier to be doing it with these three.
What a touching one.
I love them. That's all I got.
All right, my name is Dave Kellett. I do a comic strip called Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com. Thanks, Mom. I do a comic strip called Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com, and I've been doing it since, and I forgive me for being lame, I don't remember if it was 1998 or 1999. I started in England, and did it for 10 years, 8 of which I was working as a writer and then a toy designer at Mattel Toys, and working on web comics at night, something we can talk about today. And then 3 years ago, my income had gotten to about 70% of my paying day job at Mattel, and I said, all right, time to take the leap. Last year, because this is relevant, matched my Mattel salary, and this year have beat my Mattel salary. So 3 years after I quit, I'm excited. So that's the intro you wanted me to get. I was hoping for
that. Okay,
I'm sorry.
Next time.
But, to my right is a gentleman who likes to spill water, Scott Kurtz.
It's Aquaman.
It's Spider-Man.
I'm going to die in an electrical accident.
We're gonna turn and be like, Scott, I didn't hear your insights on that, and you're just quietly doing it.
Is there anyone under 18 in here?
It says on the placard that you can't do that.
Are you under 16? Hey, whose dick do I gotta suck to get some napkins?
All right. Your classiness begins.
The band that brought...
Thanks, true believers.
...six Starbucks
napkins. Oh,
poor woman is giving up. Thank you for letting me go.
And I have some good news about that exchange, so... never mind.
There we go.
Oh, no, I'm
bad news about that. There we go. Give your quick intro so we can get into it.
From my house? From the house? My name is Scott Kurtz, and... I've been doing a comic strip called Player vs. Player for 10 years. And it's, thank you, man. This is what I need. Anyway, been online since 1998, before any of this really started, I guess.
Yeah,
right? And it was a big struggle at first, but we kind of kept it in-house, kept it in family for 10 years, and it's starting to pay off. It's starting to pay off. I'm really happy with it. So, thanks to you guys.
Bam. So, and then the four of us all together, for those of you who don't know, we wrote a book called How to Make Web Comics, which is, the idea is not to be a definitive, if you do steps 1 through 10, you will find your dreams in web comics. But the idea was to basically share the pitfalls and the successes that we had found over 10 years of doing web comics. And so it's written from four guys' perspectives, each of us taking a chapter and the other guys chiming in and, you know, sort of countering arguments where necessary. And then we also, Brad does a wonderful job editing a site that's also a free information site called webcomics.com. And then we do a podcast called Webcomics Weekly. So that's enough of the intros.
And we like talking about webcomics.
Yeah,
we do.
And we're passionate about it because we really see this as, if I can use a grad school word here, it's a liminal moment in comics. Print, liminal, I'll say that again. It's a liminal moment in comics because print is, especially certain kinds of print, newspapers especially, any kind of traditional magazine cartooning, is really on its death throes, and it's probably, you know, depending on how you want to talk to, 3 to 5 years, if not sooner, for certain careers to be done. But there
we
is...
Are we agreeing on this?
Yeah, we're going to agree on that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the general consensus, at least among the four of us, is that there will be national newspapers, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the, you know,
sure.
LA Times, perhaps, that will survive. But the way syndication worked, traditionally, of there being competing newspapers in a city, bidding and upping the price and paying for strips is largely going to disappear, and therefore the entire idea of syndication in print will disappear. So Brad, why don't you give the quick rundown, you do it the best summary, I think, on what we do.
On the webcomics business model in a nutshell?
Yeah.
Basically it works like this. We've got kind of a paradox set up in that we have to try to make money giving away our comics for free on the web. That's how an outsider looks at it. You're giving your work away for free. In reality, what we're doing is using that comic as a community-building tool to start something on the web, to build something around that site that can be monetized. And what that comes down to is advertising to a certain extent, and like all comic strips, syndicated or non, licensing and merchandising. In the same way that Garfield makes money through licensed and merchandised products, so do we. So we self-publish books, we make personal appearances, T-shirts, anything that we can do to support the brand that we've built on our sites, and bring things that our community that we have built will appreciate and will want to spend money on. And that's the webcomics business model, in a nutshell. A lot of it comes down to DIY, do it yourself. Technology and the business climate is such right now that a lot of the things that used to be done by gatekeepers, syndicates, publishers, distributors, organizations of that nature, now can be very easily done by yourself. You've got to do the homework, you've got to do the hard work, but it's possible and it's attainable and it's possible to make a good degree of money with a much, much smaller audience because you've got a much higher profit margin. That's our business model in a nutshell.
And I think a parallel to that, and I'd love to hear Scott talk about this, is the idea that the, and it's even different a little bit from how the term would be applied in print, but I'd love to hear Scott talk about the idea of control. Go, here we go. Can a grown man do it?
It's like Raven.
Buh. Buh.
No, I think you're...
This is a perfect time to turn it over to Scotty to talk about the idea of control. The artist controlling the idea. Nice. We've now become a vaudeville act, ladies and gentlemen. So, turning it over to Scotty to talk about the idea of control, both in terms of IP.
Well, listen, we've all read Jurassic Park, right? We know like control is an illusion, right? Right.
Jurassic Park.
Right. Am I right? No, it's the way that I look at it is this: Well, look, we're all in the same boat, right? We're all here for one of two reasons. We either have no interest in making comics, but we just love reading them. Or we're the poor SOBs that there's this fire in our heart, we really want to make comics. And for some people, that means you just want to make them and show them to your brother or your sister or your mom and your dad or whatever. And for some of us, that means we want to make them and, you know, with our friends and hang out and go to the comic book shops and get them in the local shops. And for the unfortunate few of us that really have this aspiration that one day, you know, we'll be here and we'll be making a living at it, and we don't have to go to work every day because we're making comics, you know, then the fire really, really, really burns, and it's hard. And it's discouraging because it feels like, especially when you come here, I mean, there is just electricity in the air, literally. So much creative stuff is happening, and you just feel like, it's all happening. It's all happening without me. It's all passing me by. It's all passing me by. And there's this rush. There's this mad desperation. So what happens is this illusion, this hype, and let's face it, we've all been to Comic-Con many years, and we know that after Comic-Con's over, as hyped up as it was, at the end, you're left with no money in your bank account and sore feet. Right? That's what the hype was about. You spend a lot of money, you travel a lot, you walk a lot, your feet hurt, and you'll do it again next year. But the world keeps turning. There's time for you. So what you want to avoid, and how this does lead to control, I'm sorry, I'm being like my dad, is when you get in that minute, you know, you feel that desperation too quickly, you will grab at anything that's offered to you. And so if someone says, hey, you know, I'm with so-and-so comics, we'd love to publish you. You're like, oh my God, this is my chance. This is my chance, this is my chance, this is a one-on-one chance. Do I take it if I don't take it? You know, and maybe the contract's not so bad, but there's one part you don't like that you don't want to say. You don't want to say, because what if you ruin it? What if you blow your one chance? So what you need to do is remember, you know, like when you were in high school and it seemed like that day was the first and last day of your entire life and you were trapped in it. You know, you have time. The money that you make this year, the success you make this year, the progress you make this year, is like your income. It's your weekly income. So let's say you have a potential to make some money doing comics this year. That's your paycheck for the week. Your property, your IP, your control, and let's just say control, because sometimes you lease out your property for different things, but your control over your situation, that's your savings account. That's your retirement. Because whatever money you make this year off of any deal that's offered in the now, next year you won't care about it. It'll be spent, it'll be gone, it'll have done its thing,
And if there's still work to do, like if you got paid the money and the money's spent and there's still work to do on that project that you got that advance for, then it really sucks. So just remember that you know, you're investing in yourself further on, and that control over your situation is your retirement account. And that was the attitude I've always taken with PVP, and it's starting to pay off for me. So and listen, you know, there are some years that PVP just got me through the year, or got me halfway through the year, and then my wife got me through the other half because she works, you know. And but keeping control of it is paying off dividends now. As I'm getting.
And I think the parallel there for the, at least the one that was instructive for us.
Did I do okay on that?
You did great. No, and no water was spilled, so
no.
We're good.
For non-comedy purposes. Comedy, I'll spill water.
The moments that were instructive for us in recent years was all these fantastic golden age, and I mentioned this the other day, but all the golden age and silver age cartoonists and comics and illustrators and pencilers and inkers that created some of the characters you and I know and love and have gone on to literally generate hundreds of millions of dollars worldwide in, you know, film and in properties and merchandise, who, you know, every year you hear about a new one. Oh, so-and-so needs to get a liver operation and literally doesn't have the $3,000 to pay for his liver.
I mean, oh my God, Dave Cochran, who invented most of the X-Men and all these movies, died in a vehicle.
Right. And the comparison for me is someone like Jeff Smith, who has very wisely controlled most, if not everything, that he's created, and will even in years where he's not creating anything, when he's 60, 70, 80, will probably live a very comfortable life.
Might be an old one.
They'll get back. The checks will continue to be coming in for him. And webcomics has that same sort of philosophy. Is we might use, we might employ, we might partner with publishers, we might partner with merchandisers, we might, what's a different way to say it? We might allow our content to go through different channels, and earn the income that might come from that.
Your permission to give.
Right, it's your permission to give. The copyright is yours. The monies are coming, or at least directed towards you, and are being shared. And it's a very different business relationship than someone who's receiving a check from United Media, or receiving a check from Random House, or receiving a check from DC.
Right.
Chris, why don't you talk for a minute about the idea, because we were talking about this at drinks last night, the idea of that sort of elliptical curve.
Oh, what was a? Well, do that. What was the cool science term for it?
Discrete versus continuous.
Yeah.
Oh, discrete. There we go. Bam. Yeah. Maybe one biologist. Yeah. discrete versus continuous.
Let's talk about Romani and something.
This will make you sound smart.
No, it used to be, or at least it seemed to be, a lot more like, are you either successful at it or you're not? It's either one or zero. You've made it, or you are floundering, and you should give up.
You're a hobbyist, or you're public.
Right. Like, and the idea there is that you're making no money. If you got signed, bam, suddenly you're making a paycheck.
But now there's so many ways to accumulate money and so many different income streams that you can it's continuous now. You can be at this point on a curve. It's no longer a step. You can be at any point along here and continue to build on your way up. So there's no longer a I would say it's a lot harder to find a point at which you could say, yes, you are a success, and yes, you have completely made it, and you're done.
Because, and I think this is critical too, like a lot of you in here, we might at various points in our life just consider ourselves a hobbyist, and maybe that's all we expected at that point in our life, you know?
Yeah.
And so with your webcomic, your first achievements will be, hey, I got my family to read it, including my cousins in El Paso, you know? And then the next stage is, oh my God, I got 500 people, where did these people come from, you know?
Yeah.
So and sorry, I'm talking too much, but
and it becomes a situation where instead of that graph that Dave was saying where you're hobbyist, bam, you're a professional. Now what we're seeing is you're a hobbyist that makes a little bit of beer money on the weekends, you're a hobbyist that makes a little bit more money, and if you keep building it and keep putting the time and work into it, you keep sliding up. And that's the other part, is that a lot of what we've said so far, it has been mathematical and has been 1 + 1 = 2, but there's that other intangible quality in there that says you have to make a comic that people want to read. You have to make a comic that your community wants to read, something they could hook on to, something that you put a lot of work and time and effort into making it the best comic that it can possibly be.
But going back to the levels of success, though, Scott, you were saying like the idea of not, of maybe being to the point where you're approached, Spider-Man, where you're getting approached by somebody and you say, oh, I gotta grab it.
Right, right.
Because I'm not gonna be successful if I don't have that one thing.
I don't think
there's any one moment, really. I mean, these successes are built on you know, you have 80 moments in a year.
No, exactly. I mean, I hate to nerd it out or equate it to a video game, but it's like making a World of Warcraft character. You don't, you know, the reason why you start at 1 and build up, you know, you enjoy the time all the way up from level 1 to level 80, but I mean, it's just like anything else in your life. It takes time to do it. Brian Michael Bendis was talking about how he was a 10-year overnight success because, I mean, Brian was writing and drawing his own comics for years and nobody cared about it. And then, you know, he wrote Torso and Jinx and stuff like that.
Right.
But anyway, he was saying that when he hit, people were calling him an overnight success and no one was aware that he had been spending 10 years publishing independent comics on his own. But the other thing about the difference between these integral steps that exist as opposed to a continuous level of success on the way up is that there's these weird illusions that kind of exist that you buy into, and you need to break free of them and start really examining what things mean. Like if I were to say Scott Kurtz is published by Image Comics, you might think, ah, he made it, you know. But that doesn't mean that I made it. I mean, there's a lot of people publishing Image Comics whose books don't break even. And Image has given them a couple more issues, and they've had two or three Image books, and they've been up at Image and in the retailers and stuff for a couple years, and they have made no money. But there's this illusion that is a tier of success, that is a tier of achievement. There's legitimacy to it. Let's say, I'm in the newspaper. I got my strip picked up by a syndicate, and I'm a syndicated comic strip artist now. I've made it. Well, make sure that person's made it. You don't know how many papers it's in, how well it's doing, you know. So, you know, there's all these things, these illusions out there of success. And, you know, my brother and I and some friends of mine that are mercenary like us when we talk business, we joke around a lot where we say, people say to us, well, I mean, you know, I have my own measure of success. I just want creative fulfillment. And we're like, yeah, well, we know how to measure success, too. Are you making a lot of money? No, you failed. We're making a lot of money, so we're succeeding. And that feels good when you're making a lot of money, and it feels like shit when you're not. But what I'm saying is that you guys and I both know that you're in it to make the money. You're in it to succeed, and you want to make a living at it, but not because you want to be rich. Because you want more time to do this. You want to be able to not have to worry about having a day job and fitting all of this in. So rather than worry about necessarily the end goal, now that you have these kind of in-between points you can reach, you know, just focus about where you are. Because I know that for me, as I look back, it was one of those things where it's like, you know, if Angie and I could just make, you know, because Angie and I just got first married, it's 13 years ago, I'm like, man, if I can just make 25 grand, if I can just get a job making 25 grand, we'll be set, we'll never need more. And I was like, if I can just make 30 grand, if I can just get that raise to 30 grand, you know. And that seems silly now, but at the time, that was the important step.
Right.
And so, for me now, to look back and say, if someone goes, I made 30 grand, I'm like, yeah, that's a nice kid. I remember when I was looking for 30 grand. it's on a scale. It's on a scale of where you are. So you.
I'm glad you're sweet about it, though. But,
yeah, good job, kid. Yeah.
Good job, kid. Well, you know, it's like.
No, I know. I know what I mean. But
and I remember when I had my strip at the college paper and how important that was to me.
Yeah.
And if someone says, "Hey, my strip at the college paper," I'm like, "Some."
Spider-Man.
But I want to go back for a minute to something that Scott said, which is sort of the validity, the legitimacy that as an artist you feel if you make it into DC or if the Penguin or Random House or Andrews McBeal sign you up. And I think that's a link, you know, for most of the life of print, from Gutenberg on, somebody else had to forward the money. You know, you as an artist didn't have the...
Okay,
I thought you were laughing about a Gutenberg reference.
Ah, he
referenced Germany. Anyway, you know, from Gutenberg on, somebody else had to forward the money to do print. So from literally the initiation of print onward, there was a legitimacy of someone else going, I believe in you, here's money to make this book or this pamphlet or whatever.
And then he gets to go, my life is so pure now because I give you art.
I like how you went through
and
that.
You give me cash. I am an artiste. I have received money.
Right.
For art.
watch. My art is legitimate. We're taking both home and tell my mom and papa that I'm an artist.
How do you make money with your art?
Well,
And then you're like, I sell t-shirts.
Oh,
really? You can do it.
A t-shirt? T-shirt.
But where I'm going with this, as I eat Hershey's Kisses, is, I'm of the opinion that we're on the downward edge of a mass media, the post-war World War II. I mean, he always laughs at me when I say this, but, you know, especially in the U.S. and Canada, there was a genuine uptick in the idea of mass nationalized media in the U.S., you know, and it became internationalized in the last couple decades. But, as we're seeing with the breakdown in, like, Borders is about to go bankrupt, Barnes & Noble is closing stores all over the place, Walden Books is essentially gone. Newspapers are shutting down all over the place, and there's a consolidation on a lot of media.
I was going to say that.
What?
I know. Do not offer
proof. Who brought the chocolate?
Sorry, but here's the beautiful part as a cartoonist, and Brad touched on this, is the idea is that they're in the removal of the middlemen, the publishers, the distributors, the bookstores, the everybody that took a cut along the way. As an artist, I don't need to sell 40,000 copies of my books anymore.
Ah, this is super important.
I need to sell, you know, we don't even need to fix on a number, but I need to sell X number wherever you live in the United States or Canada.
We should have done the math ahead of the panel just
no,
so we have
I can see the math, but I don't necessarily want to talk my income. That's not important. What I'm talking about is your career or your dreams and hopes. And the idea is that there's an article, for better or for worse, called 1,000 True Fans online that I would recommend you read.
It's at kk.com.
That's
an initial.
Wow. It's his initial. Oh, is it? Okay. 1,000 True Fans. And the idea that is that if you have out of a sum total of, say, 15,000, 20,000, 30,000 fans, you have 1,000 true fans that'll spend, and I think the number he picked was like $100 a year on you, you can make a living. And so because the middleman on all your art creation has been removed. If you're selling digital music downloads, you're no longer selling to Virgin Records, who's in turn taking it from Maverick Records, who's in turn taking it with your agent and your publisher. You're just selling your music directly as a band to someone online. Same thing is true with webcomics. My site online, I can hire out to do all my shipping, and we have a warehouse in LA, and we do the shipping and the ordering from our own site. And there is no middleman. I hire out to the best price printer either in Canada or in China or wherever it might be to produce the book. And the sale and the direct interaction of readers who know they are literally supporting the artist that they love. It's not buying it at a Barnes & Noble and that's going to a chain of events that pays the artist they love. That's actually an affirming thing for the readers, too. And that, maybe Chris can talk about that better than I can, but the idea that these super fans that form a bond with you make your living possible.
And it's kind of the idea of where I think a lot of more traditional like newspaper cartoonists complain is the idea of having to do all this ancillary material that surrounds your comic. You have to have a blog, you might Twitter, you're selling t-shirts, and a lot of it becomes your personality driven, which is very important.
Which is very difficult for some of these guys.
What do you mean for some artists? Oh, well, you mean the print guys? Oh, yeah. I thought you meant artists and broadly.
But that's a big part of cultivating that fanship and getting people engaged in your work and coming back is that additional content. And that, we talked about how often do you, what's the best update schedule? You know, and more often is better because you create a ritual. And by doing stuff like blog and additional things like that, I like how I dropped the article, English is my second language. By doing the blog and the Twitter,
thank you, Mom.
You bring people back to your site more often than they were to come already. And you build on that. And I'm looking forward to when it becomes a lot more about personality driven things.
Right.
You know?
Let me say that I in these arguments / discussions that we had with, say, the syndicated cartoonists, and they ask how they could, you know, all right, well, tell me, how do you make a living? And you say, well, you know, you start a blog and you work this. You know, we're starting from the beginning. We're telling them how we started in 1998, and if I were them, and I had been syndicated for 30 years, and this had been done for me at this point, I would say the exact same thing. I would say, I don't want to do that. And I don't blame them. I don't want to do that. So we're not helping them solve their problem, and I don't think that's the solution to their problem. It's just like when I was talking to Kevin last night, and I asked him how the show was, and he said, oh, you know, Artist Alley, it's the ghetto, it's where, you know, adult house is. Well, and I remember thinking to myself, thank God I'm not in Artist Alley anymore. At the time, it was important, it was great, and it was electrifying and charging, but that's not the problem I'm solving anymore.
Right.
I wouldn't want to go back to Artist Alley. You know what I'm saying?
Right, it was at the beginning of your tenure.
Right, it's like telling someone I need to go back and do high school over again. You did it. You've done that.
Right, and the background, for those of you guys who don't know, is that we very often engaged in discussions, sometimes heated, with print cartoonists about what they might have to do to salvage their careers. And it's gotten, like Scott was hinting at, it's gotten pretty heated. Because rightly so, you know, they've sent in a digital file or an original script to United Media or United Features, and they gotten a check, and really handsome checks for decades, you know. And it's very hard for them to face the fact that when newspapers go away, that they are going to either have to figure out very quickly who they can hire to do this for them, or figure out how to do it themselves.
Or, you know, if they don't go away, if things change so radically that the system in which they're being paid now changes, you know, they're going to have to change too. We all know that's not fun. But let me be a little bit more specific when I say print cartoonists, because there's a very interesting thing I've observed. The arguments I get into about print cartoonists about making money on the web is never in comic books proper. It's never the people here. It's syndicated cartoonists. It's cartoonists in the newspapers. And it's not a matter of age either, because I thought maybe it was a generational thing. I used to talk to Michael Ringo, who I would call him up, and you know, when you draw, you just call and talk to your buddies who draw all day, and you sit on the phone and you realize you've been talking for 4 hours, and it's really, I'm done talking to you, asshole. Goodbye. But I would always call Mike and say, what are you working on? Fantastic Four. What's happening? What's going on? What are you drawing? What's it like on, you know, what's happening next? And he's like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. What's going on with you? And all he wanted to know was how he could get comics on the web. He liked the Marvel stuff, and he loved it. But he wanted to do stuff on the web. He wanted to do creator stuff. He wanted to talk to Kirkman about doing stuff with Image and blah, blah, blah. And there's this big excitement in comic books about going to the web. And it seems like those print cartoonists get it. And it's not generational, because who here knows who Nick Carty is? Nick Carty? Okay. Todd DeZago introduced me to Nick Carty. Nick Carty's 100 and fuck years old. Howard Chaykin introduced me to Nick Carty by saying, Nick Carty, you know Nick, one day to live. One day to live. But here you have Nick Carty sitting in front of me, and Todd goes, Nick, this is Scott Kurtz, he does cartoons, and they're on the internet. And I'm thinking, oh boy, here we go, I'll explain this. And he reaches over and he grabs my hand and he goes, tell me how you do this. I'm excited about this, I want to put my comic on the web. And I was stunned. But that's what's interesting, is I think it has to do with an adaptiveness, an open-mindedness.
I think also maybe the idea that in comic books, there's more of a tradition of at least aspiring to creating your own title, and it's yours, you know what I mean, rather than...
Syndicated cartoonist.
Maybe that's not the right thing. Well, for whatever reason, there is a cultural difference. That here, the comic book creators, I think, grok it a little bit. Ooh, grok it. Man, grok. What a nerd. Ha! Comic book creators... I'll say it again. Understand a little bit better, you know.
But understand the thrust.
Brad, please stop interrupting. But I just think. I just think that no matter what level you're at, whether you're the hobbyist who, I think it's all about solving the problem that you're at. Okay. For me, the problem is that I'm 10 years into this. I want to make sure that I don't lose readers or people stop getting interested in my work. I want to keep my work adapting. You know, like Madonna's not the same Madonna she was. People love Madonna. And I want to be Madonna. And I want to move to Seattle, and I need to up my revenue a certain street. You know, so this is my problem to solve. Some syndicated cartoonists want to stop being dependent on the syndicates and see if they can make money on the web. That's their problem to solve. Some people are hobbyists and want to make some extra money so they can justify to their wife why when they come home from work, they work on comic strips for 4 hours, and they go to bed at 11 o'clock at night when they're supposed to, and you stay up till 2 a.m. and you're grumpy the next day. And they want to find a way to make some extra money so that the wife feels like they're not just throwing this time away. So I think that the goal here is deciding where you're at and what problem you have to solve right now on this path, wherever you're heading, and let's address the problems. So maybe it's
we can do it!
How do I get to Seattle?
Is that the 1980s
flat? Okay, just that.
So, we're gonna. By the way, we're gonna open it up for questions a little later on. But maybe a bit of a summary is worthwhile in terms of income streams, because some people it might be complete and nonplussed to them as to how money is generated by giving it away for free.
Yeah, we haven't talked about this at all.
So, just from a broad scope, you might be saying, all right, well, how are you making any income at all by giving everything away for free? For example, with Sheldon, my script, I have 3,000 scripts in the archives, all of which are free. You can go there, and for all I know, you're grabbing them, you're putting on your blog, you're putting them on your live journal. I don't know what you're doing with them. That makes like an old man. I don't know what you're doing with them. You and the kids with your internet. I don't know. Just don't step on my lawn. Anyway. So I'm putting all the scripts out there for free. They're spreading. And here's the basic idea, is that if you, say I do a strip about a Lord of the Rings strip, and it's a joke about Lord of the Rings, and if you love Lord of the Rings, you're going to spread that to every Lord of the Rings forum you happen to visit online. You're going to send it to your cousin in Topeka who loves Lord of the Rings. You're going to send it to your old college roommate. And so what you've just done without realizing it is you helped my strip go viral to 10, 20, 30, 100,000 people if you're you know, power blogger or something. Power blogger. Makes it sound like you're jogging.
Someone who blogs like this.
He's on his treadmill type. I guess what I'm saying here is that, you know, traditionally a company, a startup, a long established company, there is an allotment for advertising, for PR, for marketing. I have never spent any money. Well, okay, no, I want to caveat that. I have spent over time experimenting with AdSense. I've probably spent under $100 over the last 10 years advertising on these sites. But aside from that, what I would consider to be an almost inconsequential expense, I've never spent money on advertising, and yet my script grows anywhere between 2 and 5% a month in terms of readership. So you get what I'm saying here in terms of allotment for advertising, PR, marketing. By giving it away for free, the public does my work for me in terms of spreading it virally. And there are much greater successes than I. I'm a small webcomic in the grand scheme of things. XKCD is huge. Penny Arcade is huge. There are massive businesses that are much larger than I. But the basic idea is you give it away for free. People become enamored with it and passionate with it in a way that takes a long time with comic strips. And then over time, they start to find that they are willing to crack their wallet. They will buy a book collection, two book collections, original art, a t-shirt. And in the meantime, all the advertisements that are running alongside my site are generating me money as well. I'm trying to think of other income streams that we could talk about.
But we've talked about books. We've talked about t-shirts. T-shirts are another big cornerstone in the webcomics business model.
Right.
What about like premium stuff like digital content, like additional strips and other?
That's something that you and Scott have kind of opened up lately, and I've been meaning to ask in the podcast.
What happened? What?
How has it been working out?
As far as digital, offering digital stuff for pay.
I always kind of viewed Asset Bar as an experiment, and I use it to raise money for SCAD, for Ringo Fund. The tough thing about the Asset Bar is that it's a separate section of the website, and the trick about creating that paid-for content on the web is it has to have value. It has to have a really strong value to it. And unfortunately, the stuff that I'm doing right now, which I call the machine, which is just keeping PvP going, the daily strip, making sure the books are being published, all the stuff I've been preparing for cons. The machine takes up so much of my time that I'm having a hard time making sure that this asset bar thing, this paid-for content, has value. No one's going to pay for something unless it has some kind of value to it. I think that obviously paid-for content will work, right? People have come up this weekend and bought books from me, and that's, they paid for my content. And it's got a value to it. And there's something really great about books and why I don't think print will ever go away is part of the value of a book is if you watch when they get their book, so many people buy the book and go, you know, and I do that too.
It's an artifact.
It just feels good to have it. And it's harder to give that kind of a value to something that's online, you know.
And that's worth mentioning because so many times people come up to us and be like, you know, why don't you just charge for your comics online? I don't understand this cultural shift. Just charge. If someone wants to read a daily strip, let them pay for it. And I think in some ways I don't want to be ageist, but in some ways that's an age thing, in that they don't understand that literally no one will pay for things aside from maybe the Wall Street Journal, which is largely companies subsidized in terms of your company will pay for you to get a digital Wall Street Journal subscription. But look at the just the graveyard of failures of companies that have tried to charge for content. I'm sorry, Brad wants to say something, everybody. Here we go.
No, but I was going to build on that, and that is that I don't think it's an age thing, because I think it's, I come from a newspaper background myself, and I hear time and time again for the newspaper's website, those guys, they give that thing away for free, and if they would just do a subscription, we'd be out of trouble if everybody would just pay a nickel for every page. And I always say the same thing, and it's a conversation stopper, and I'm actually pretty good at stopping conversations. And that is, I say, yeah, you're right, like that other site that makes a lot of money giving subscriptions away. The one that doesn't do porn, but they do subscription model website. What was that site again? And then we change the subject. Because there's not very many sites other than, like you said, the New York Times, to an extent, is making generating revenue, but there's not many non-adult sites that are generating revenue through a subscription model. There just aren't.
And I think the reason for that is it's zeros and ones. And I can only speak for myself, but there's still something when you buy, say, Microsoft software or Adobe software, when you get the installation disk. You know what I mean? Like, there's still something a little odd.
Because you want something to break.
There's something
really?
Tangible.
15 minutes? That's it?
Wait, we go
we'll go question and answer.
Chatty cat.
I disagree a little bit because I pay for virtual content all the time. World of Warcraft. I'm at the biggest convention in the entire world, and all I can think about is what do I get my blood on my
mouth? There's something we said. It's not a far leap though. The gambling porn.
It's the same as porn.
It's because it triggers
you
the
can
same,
there.
It's the same psychological response. Gambling, porn, and video. Listen, they're all crippling in terms of addiction.
You're right.
So it's not an accident that gambling, porn, and video games are right,
take it easy.
They all trigger similar events in the mind.
I don't know. I think that less people will pay for it, but I think it's possible to create something online of value that people will pay for. But I think that...
Well, regardless, we're not there right now.
No, sir.
Let me ask something about that. The idea of the premium content and people paying for it.
But let me say this.
Okay.
All of these games, World of Warcraft, all these MMOs, there's a 14-day free trial.
Yeah.
They give it away.
Right.
Well, what I was going to say about Asset Bar, and I always looked at it as an experiment too, is I'm facing the... yes.
Yeah?
I know you're tired. I'm facing the idea that I'm doing this premium stuff for people who pay, and it paid out well when people signed up, but now people aren't really signing up for it anymore. And I'm thinking I'm harming myself by hiding, say, like when I Ustream and when I do these shows and people can interact, when I hide that behind the wall. I think I would do better by making it free and letting it more people see
it. Brad's spoken about this, I think, the best in the past, is that's where a catch-22 of putting things behind subscription walls in terms of growing the audience. Because if you put something on subscription, and Brad can talk about this, but let's say you have 10 people subscribing and one gets sick or one loses his job, so now you have 9. Well, how do you replace that 10? Brad's on
right. No, you did a perfect job. I mean, that's exactly what you're talking about there. Is it's impossible to grow that from a subscription to keep getting new people in. And the fact of the matter is that in webcomics, the subscription model has already been attempted. Webcomics Nation started out as a subscription system. It would offer, I believe, what was it, the 2 weeks?
Modern Tales, right?
That's right. Modern Tales. It was they would allow the archives to go back 2 weeks, and any further than that, you'd have to pay. The problem with that is that comics are really built on, especially comic strips are built on a slot machine kind of mentality. And I'll explain what I mean by that. We were talking about this earlier. Every strip that you write, a certain percent of your audience thinks that it's the best thing you've ever done, and a certain percentage of your audience thinks that you've lost it and you're never going to get it back again. Being a comic strip artist means dealing with that. Getting the fan mail and the you stink mail on the same day for the same strip. And what really a comic strip is built on is that mentality of a slot machine. A slot machine is built on what's called an irregular hit. All right, it's going to hit every now and again. If that slot paid off every third pull, it wouldn't be fun anymore. But when you read a comic strip and really get into the comic strip,
there's good, there's good, there's great. There's good, and you keep hitting good every day until you get great again. That's why, like guys like me, we try to do as frequent updates as possible, because that keeps that repetitive pull and slot, pull and slot, pull and slot. That's where comics like Penny Arcade, they've got a 3-day, but they've got a lot more solid kind of readership and a very, very tight comic, and they can afford to do a 3-day a week kind of update. It's something that I've heard described as giving them steak every day, okay? But for a daily comic strip, it really builds on that gambling mentality. And once you really hook somebody into your comic, you've got them for a long, long time. You got to work hard to lose them, because they're going to keep pulling for that hot hit. If you don't have those long archives for them to go back through, and if you don't have that ability for them to really get into your stuff, if you hide that behind a subscription wall, it's really hard to build that, for lack of a better word, addicted fan.
I think what we're going to do is that we've got a mic here in the middle, and we've got 10 minutes. We're going to have people come up to the mic, if you would, and we'll try to do a pretty rapid fire, so we can get a lot of different aspects. So.
And if you don't want to get up, if you don't want to get the mic, you can just raise your hand.
You can just yell it, yeah.
Good.
Is this working?
Yes.
Spider-Man. My question was, how hard do you think it is now in webcomics especially for younger creators to hang on to the copyrights for their works? Because there are often a lot of, early on in their careers, they'll get a lot of offers from different companies that usually involve buying it out from under them.
Right.
So that they can do whatever the
hell
they
want. Don't
do that.
What I'm saying is, how hard is it to survive without that until you hit that big break that where you have control, and you're making money, but you can...
That's what it defaults to. You always have control. It's your IP.
Yeah.
Now, listen, don't get me wrong. If I came by to your booth, let's say, and saw your stuff and decided it looks good, I could draw it and say it was mine, then you'd have to fight me. But, for the most part, everyone's different, right? Everyone has their talents and their strengths and weaknesses. So what you draw, what you do, and your style and your flair and your voice... That's going to be very difficult to copy 100%, all right? It would be easier for someone to hire you to do it or pay you to do it than just try to steal it, for the most part, especially with the bigger companies, okay? But no one's going to steal your work away from you when you're not looking. I mean, they can... Your work's going to go up here and there. I've seen my stuff places that I didn't say it should go, but... There's not, like, it's not, okay. It's not a thief in the night.
The nice thing about the internet, though, especially as you start to get a readership, I mean, a couple of basic things. We're not lawyers, but U.S. copyright has varying levels of copyright protection, one being the initial moment of creation, and granted, there are ways to prove that both to the government and to the opposing party, but the nice thing about having a readership online is I've had people tell me, hey, there's a coffee shop in Nevada that's using one of your strips as a signage, you know, or, hey, I live outside of Moscow and there's somebody translating your scripts into Russian, you know what I mean? And you'll find the internet is a self-healing on some levels from your own fans. And it's a power that's kind of wonderful for a creator that may not have the ability to hire an IP attorney constantly watching and sending out C&D letters, you know? So,
These days the syndicates don't even take your copyright. I mean, they work a contract where they get half of whatever the property earns, and that's for a certain period of time. So they might as well have your copyright. But what I'm saying is, it's like someone's going to steal your identity. Like, you would show up to a meeting and you're already there. I mean, you're you. Your work is you. People might steal it here and there, but... Unless 90% of the time, unless you sign away the rights, no one can just decide they're going to steal it.
And there are, we got to go with more rapid fire.
Yeah,
there are sites online, like I think it's called You Think We Didn't Notice, or someone might correct me on that.
You Didn't Think We Noticed.
You Didn't Think We'd Notice, where literally readers, fans, artists themselves are protecting other artists who got ripped off by a corporation, by, you know, be it a t-shirt company, be it an art gallery in Los Angeles, be it whoever. And it's it has an effective power through emails and blogs and forums. So anyway, that's the short answer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
So we'll try to do these more rapid fire question and answers. So
how's it going? Just pitch that down towards you. Just pull it down. Don't be afraid. There you go.
I've had a couple of people asking if I do shirts, and I was just wondering what level of interest you need before it's worth merchandising.
Shirts are comparatively a nice test product to try, in the sense that a book run, to be worthwhile, tends to have to be in the thousands, you know. A shirt run, to be profitable, can be almost in dozens, really, depending on how much you can get a good price point. I mean, you know, a shirt, depending on what you buy, Hanes or American Apparel, can be $3 to $4 to $5, and the print run itself can be a dollar or two, including the price of the screen. So, you know, when you sell that for 20, and you've got a pretty good profit margin on the cost of goods sold.
You can do a pre-order also and judge interest, and if you only get two bites,
then you just return the money and say, yeah, that wasn't good. Pre-orders, if you're starting out and tentatively dipping a toe in. Another thing, and I don't like them, but Lulu and Cafe Press and those sort of things, you'll never make a living off them. They're a terrible service. But if you want to dip a toe in, it's no necessary cost to you to say, hey, here's some shirts. Anybody want to try it? And, oh, look, I got 10 orders. All right, I'm never doing this again. Oh, I got 100 orders. Maybe this is something I'll think about. Oh, I got 1,000 orders. Oh, my God, I've got to bring this to my own store. You know, so that's a good way to dip a toe. So hope that helped.
I would get excited about 100.
People are very quick to rush to that too, right? Like it's like, all right, my webcomic's up, now I'm gonna make t-shirts, you know?
Yeah.
Be sure not to do that too quick.
Right, I mean, something that I should have said, and then I'm gonna get to your question, is, and this is something I cannot emphasize enough, especially to younger cartoonists who come up to talk to us at the booth and ask questions. They're like, you know, I've been doing it for 2 years and I'm just feeling really frustrated and I just wanna quit. And my response to that is, you know, to be in the NBA takes the better part of 15, 20 years of just constant ball playing. And to be a doctor takes the better part of 10, 15 years to before you start really paying off as a physician. The careers in life, and I cannot emphasize this enough, the careers in life that are worth having, the ones that you want to follow your passion with, those take decades to get to. Decades, not years, not months, decades to get to. So if you have the passion for it, and there's this slow filtering process of people that don't have the passion for it, because it does take decades, but if you have the passion for it, and I swear to God, if you work on it for, what was it that Gladwell said, 10,000 hours?
10,000 hours.
10,000 hours, you will get to a point where something will start to happen. You know, maybe for you it's going to take 12,000 hours, I don't know, but it takes the better part of, you know,
not quite, exactly, well,
10,000 hours. But,
I did 4 months ago.
So that's the thought here, is that it's going to take you 10, 15 years before it really starts to click, and maybe 20 if you consider all the years you were drawing in Illinois.
Maybe 2 years, though. It could happen in 2 months, though. How about that?
Stop it.
But anyway, now you're just confusing. You're wasting your question. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, ma'am. Go ahead.
How do you promote the location of your web address?
Ah. Chris, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah, just put it at the bottom of your strip and make sure it's on there. So if anybody passes that around in their live journal or whatever, the URL is on there.
And there are other basics you can do. Put the URL in every email you send. Append it as your signature to forms without being annoying. You know, you can make good points and add to the form. Tell everyone you know when you're in the real physical world, everyone you work with, anyone in your social group.
Change your name to the URL.
No, but that's the basic sort of stuff.
I will add, make your content, focus on just making your content as good as possible. Because what I found is all the SEO, search engine optimization bullshit, and all of the networking and stuff does not beat when somebody sees your work and likes it and blogs about it. Or
right.
Someone sees your work and likes it and emails it around. And that happens because the work is striking a chord with people and they're wanting to share it. And there's a little bit you can do to get started, but for the most part, the content is the king. And people will come back once and check it out. But if you want them to come back and stick, the content has to be there. The reason for them to return or remember or to bookmark it has to be there.
It really is build a better mousetrap.
Yeah,
and
your readers will take care of that for you.
Give those readers exponential.
And
give those readers an opportunity to do that on your behalf in providing things like links for StumbleUpon, Delicious, Reddit, Digit. Networking sites like that that allow your readers with a touch of a button to share it with a large group of people quickly and easily.
And other little suggestions you could do, find snippets of code online that are free that will take your strip and mail it to a friend as a postcard. You know, hey, Margaret, I heard you broke your
right.
leg. This might cheer up your day. That sort of thing.
Because here's the brutal truth that I'm just going to say, and I don't care if anyone thinks I'm an ass. All right? On the web, you better be good. Otherwise, you are not going to make it. Our work is not being shown in a newspaper that someone already bought where they can flip to the last page, and since they already have the paper, why not see it?
A captive audience.
Yeah, a captive audience. I used to work in a radio station, and we were talking about bus advertising. And they were trying to get us on buses, and they were like, look, it's a captive audience. And that's when I was introduced to that term, like, they're on the bus, they're stuck there, they're looking at the ad anyway, why not put your... That, those days of your strip being seen because of that are do not exist on the web. If you are not good on the web, you will not survive. So just focus on the work and you'll do better.
And the best example I give, and I'm going to go do it real quick because I don't really want to get through more questions, but Kate Beaton, who I've never met, who's a fantastic cartoonist. She's so damn
who's
talented.
That?
Kate Beaton?
Oh, yeah.
And I always bring her up as an example because I think for a lot of respects, Kate, if I have it right, was a history major, doesn't really know coding, doesn't really know programming. Her site was terribly constructed, I think, and her cartoons even were kind of badly scanned GIFs that shouldn't have been GIFs, should have been JPEGs. And yet her work was so damn good that it got big enough where she had people offering to make the site better and to rescan things. And she's so talented, if you get what I'm saying, is that the web made it happen for her because she was so good. So that's the idea, is focus on your work, just get it out there. All right, next question.
We're out of time.
Oh!
What's your question real quick? Go, go.
Go, go.
So I wanted to ask about the subscription-based business model.
It won't work. Sit down. Oh. Next. Spider-Man.
Is there a hybrid between that and merchandising? What do you think of that, where maybe subscription models...
DerekFireball.net uses something like that. Yeah, Mac Blogger, where if you subscribe, you get a t-shirt and something else. And it has worked for limited, small, niche audiences.
Thanks, guys.
But it's not
appreciate
necessarily...
It. Thank you, Mr.
And I should mention before you go that we're at booth 1228 with the book How to Make Web Comics, if anybody's interested. So. Thank you, guys.